barrier to entry,
okay,
as far as real estate investing goes. So that means two things. That means anybody can do it. And the problem with that is that anybody can do it.
This week's podcast is brought to you by Spartan Invest. Spartan currently manages hundreds of turnkey properties across Alabama and Tennessee, and is where I personally bought my first out-of-state turnkey property. In fact, I have two properties with them now, and both tenants just renewed for another 2 years. That should tell you the quality of their team and their due diligence. If you are a first-time investor or are looking to expand your real estate portfolio, check out SpartanInvest.com.
Are you tired of the 9-to-5 lifestyle? Do you want more freedom to do what you want, when you want it, without sacrificing your current income? Then this is the show for you. Every week, we dive into John's journey towards financial freedom and everything he has learned since 2014. Real estate investing, cryptocurrency, stocks, private lending, foreign residency, tax saving strategies, infinite banking, assets protection, and much more. Now, here is your host, the founder of the Wealth and Freedom Nexus, John Rickgarn.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, depending on when you're listening to this. This is John Rickgarn, your host, as always, of the Wealth and Freedom Nexus podcast. And today we got a great guest, Stephen Libman, originally from New Jersey, but recently I found out moved to South Carolina. So I'm sure it's a lot warmer than it is here in the balmy tropics of Marshall, Minnesota. Steve actually brings a wide berth of experience and knowledge from the real estate space. Started off as a realtor, like I am now, and moved on to broker and flipper, and then realized as much as I love paying all these taxes to Uncle Sam, I need to do something different, and then moved on to syndication, self-storage, and helping other investors with their passive income needs as well. With that, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Really appreciate you having me.
Yeah, you bet. I know we've kind of talked and had numerous, mutual connections in the industry, and glad we finally had a chance to connect here for ourselves and also for my listeners. So maybe you can maybe just start off with, kind of take us back in time and how and when you got started in real estate.
Yeah, I graduated college back in 2004. My degree is in sociology from Boston University, so not exactly real estate finance.
Gotcha.
But got into Manhattan, started doing some sales jobs there, and quickly learned I did not want to work for anybody else.
Okay.
And just wanted to kind of be my own boss and work in some kind of sales capacity where I'd be able to kind of dictate my own schedule and things like that.
Sure.
At the same time, my sister-in-law opened up a real estate brokerage. This was just after the financial collapse, and she was doing a lot of bank-owned properties. So she was doing a lot of listings, and we were selling those bank-owned properties to investors for flips or rentals or whatever.
Okay.
So I got some good insight into how other people were starting to create wealth through real estate, and I was being their broker. And, fast forward a couple of years, I recognized that, hey, I'm finding these good deals for these other investors. I should probably capitalize on them myself versus just selling it to them. And so we started a wholesale business. And, we would do, we'd lock up a contract. We'd sell that contract to another investor for a couple $1,000 margin.
Okay.
And that's how we started. That's how we started growing and doing some wholesales and then growing that business to doing, 15 to 20 deals a month.
Okay.
And at the end of the year, we'd be paying big checks to Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
And, we just found, it's a good business. It is a job. It's it's very active. It's very transactional.
Yeah.
You do a deal and then you have to go back out and find another deal and find another deal.
So
it's a good business to get started in, but it wasn't what I envisioned when I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Right. It was like, well, this is a good job, but this isn't the passive income investment side of things that I really wanted to get involved in.
Right.
So, we did that business for about 8 years. And about 4 years ago, we made the transition to commercial real estate. And the reason that we did that is we read another great book called Tax-Free Wealth by Tom Wheelwright.
Happens
to be Kiyosaki's CPA, teaching you that the tax code is more than just a book of rules to get you in trouble, but it's actually a playbook on how to efficiently pay less taxes if you want to play by their rules. And that was just an aha moment for us. We said, you know, we can continue building this business and maybe outpace what we have to pay in 50% in taxes to where we can create some real revenue, or we can create the same amount, maybe a little bit more in revenue, but not pay nearly as much in taxes because we're investing in tax advantaged type of real estate. Mm-hmm. So we built about 400,000 square feet of self-storage facilities down in Florida. And then we've bought and sold about 1,000 multifamily units, and we're on track, hopefully, to close about $200 million in transactions this year.
Wow.
In multifamily deals and some senior and student projects as well.
Okay. And is that throughout the U.S.? Is it centered more? I know you mentioned Florida for the self-storage there.
Yeah. So we're geographically agnostic. I mean, where we like to go is where populations are moving, right? So everybody's bullish on Texas. Everybody's bullish on Florida.
Yeah.
We are as well. We like the Carolinas, some parts of Georgia. The Midwest has some good towns where you can still get some good cash flows and stuff. But, you know, again, we're really looking for where populations are moving to, where the economics make sense, where you see some economic growth and drivers. We're not buying in California, New Jersey, and New York.
Or Illinois.
Yeah, exactly. We might do some development deals in those deals in those states, right? Because there's some opportunities there to get just to capitalize on the housing market and the lack of supply. But buy and hold, we're typically in the Midwest and Southeast.
All right. Sounds good. And I did just want to take a step back because I think this is the first time my listeners have even heard the mention of wholesaling. I plan on having an episode solely dedicated to this in the future, but maybe you can just quickly, you know, give my listeners to the first time, this is the first time they've heard of, you know, wholesaling. Maybe you can just give us a quick insight of, you know, what is that? How does it work? And, you know, how did you use it to make your real estate empire grow?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really the lowest barrier to entry as far as real estate investing goes. So that means two things. That means anybody can do it. And the problem with that is that anybody can do it. So it, you know, there's a lot of wholesalers out there that get a bad rap because they don't do it properly, but let's just focus on doing it properly. Right. And that is finding either an on or off market deal. I know guys that do just MLS deals, right? You can find estate owned properties or bank owned properties on the MLS. And I literally would used to search by term, you know, handyman, fixer upper, bank owned, estate owned, whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you can find some of these deals that they need work. And then you go in and you just go make offers that make sense. And, you know, you have to understand a little bit about construction costs and you have to understand a little bit about carry costs and things like that. But essentially you tie up this contract and you put your earnest money deposit down and, you know, you can now market that property. You have a financial interest in that property. So now you can market it. So we would build a cash buyers list of other investors that we knew flipped property. And we would send it out to those guys. We go out and we do a walkthrough and then we take contracts on it and we'd come up with an offering price. So we bought it for 100,000. We'd send it out to people at 120. And, you know, depending on the market, depending on the returns, depending on how well you buy it, you can make a margin on, you know, 10, 15, 20. We've done $250,000 wholesales. So there's a wide breadth of how to get involved in those types of deals. But again, low barrier to entry, you just need the earnest money deposit essentially and make sure that you either sell that contract or the rights to that contract or kill the contract during your due diligence period so that you don't lose your earnest money. But essentially, that's all it is. You're buying and selling a contract to an investor who's going to come in and pay cash and you make a rip off of it for finding the deal.
Sure. So, yeah. And I think, and I'm guessing this is where it came from, the wholesaling term, you know, go to a whatever retail store, grocery store, you know, the box of cereal costs a grocery $2 a box and they resell it for $3 a box. I mean, that's basically kind of where it comes into it. If you can set up that, you know, Steven bought a property for $80,000, sells the contract for $100, makes $20,000, but that property with a little TLC, you know, after, I don't know, say $20,000, maybe it's worth $140,000 in the market. So the end buyer gets $20,000, you get $20,000, the original seller gets a headache off their plate. So I think structured properly, everybody wins. And like you said, you know, unfortunately, some wholesalers have a bad rap. I mean, I still get postcards for just ridiculously low offers on properties I have. And it's like, yeah, you got to be out of your mind. But I'm sure, you know,
it's a numbers game, right?
Exactly. Sending out 100,000 postcards, you're going to get one that doesn't know what they're doing or isn't educated. And it's like, yeah, sure, I'll sell this $100,000 property to you for $20,000. And then hence where you get the bad rep.
Maybe they just need to sell it quick and you're the easy button.
Right? Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Most people sold to us because we were the easy button.
Yeah.
They didn't want to go through the listing and the showing. And so, yeah, there's definitely a carve out of the market where wholesalers can exist and mm-hmm. can do their business really well. And hopefully they're providing value to the homeowner and hopefully they're providing value to the investors.
Right.
That they're selling it to.
Yeah. I think if it's a, like you said, win-win, or if everyone wins, that's a good transaction. If there's someone that walks away, you know, the biggest loser, so to speak, then it's not good for all the parties involved. So
absolutely.
You had mentioned obviously with, you know, whether it's the wholesaling, and I'm sure fix and flipping, most of my listeners are familiar with from the HGTV shows of, you know, buying a distressed property, you know, slapping on a coat of paint and magically it's worth double what you originally, you know, paid for it. Obviously I'm joking. It's not quite that simple, but you know, with all these transactional pieces, whether it's a wholesaling, whether it's a fix and flip, you know, right off the bat, you're self-employed. So you got 15.2% FICA taxes that go to the government from dollar one. And unlike, you know, your federal income taxes or even state income taxes, there's no exemptions. There's no deductions. It's just, you made $100,000, $15,200 goes right to the Social Security and Medicare. And then on top of that, you might have your states and local taxes. And then, of course, the federal wage, I think at the time of recording this, we're at somewhere 38, 39% as the top marginal tax rate. So you just do the basic math there, you know, make $100,000. It's not uncommon. $50,000 is going to go right to Uncle Sam. So in order to truly net $100,000, you have to sell $200,000 and then obviously keep going up and up. What was kind of the, I know you mentioned at the end of the year, you had to, you know, write a big check in taxes. What was kind of your, I don't know, maybe aha moment, or what was kind of the breaking point that you said, you know, gosh, this, you know, why am I working all this to send half of it to Uncle Sam?
Yeah, I mean, it's just getting around mentors. You know, we had other people that were in the space that were saying, hey, you know, there's ways to figure out some deductions. And I think everybody knows kind of the reasonable deductions that you can take as a business owner. But there's other things out there, right? I mean, I have a buddy who just bought a single prop plane because it was a write-off through the IRS. And, you know, you could buy Teslas and you can write those things off. So there's a lot of stuff in the tax code that we probably don't know that H&R Block isn't going to tell you about. Mm-hmm. And not for any other reason than they're not tax advisors, right? They're there to do your returns. Mm-hmm. So we just got around people smarter than us. And that's typically been the only way that we've been successful in the past, is getting around people smarter than us and saying, hey, how do you avoid paying 50% in taxes?
Yeah.
And then they start selling you, well, you know, you can actually offset some of your taxable gain by investing. And I was like, but that's going to create more gain. And then, you know, you start understanding how some depreciation works in the tax code. And you can, I mean, last year, my federal tax return was negative $400,000.
Nice.
So it's nice. I mean, until you try to go get a loan, but that's
right.
That's a story for a different time. But, yep. You know, so that's all we did. We got around some other smart people that were doing similar things that we were, and showing us how to pay less in taxes. And then we started reading some books and just getting educated on it. And then, yeah, we just started investing in the things that we knew could create depreciation and create less of a taxable income for us.
Mm-hmm. So, well, and I think you hit the nail right on the head. You know, obviously, tax-free wealth, definitely one of my recommended reads. You know, like Tom Wheelwright has said, you know, the tax code, really just a small section that says, this is how much you owe us in taxes, and this is what's taxable. And the rest of it of, I don't know, 80,000 pages or whatever the monstrosity actually is, are, you know, sets of rules and deductions and opportunities to lower your tax bill. And you know, 30,000 foot view as a business owner, if you're providing food, energy, jobs, housing, or, you know, more than one of those, that's where a lot of the tax breaks are. And obviously we're talking about housing in this regard. And, you know, myself personally, I love depreciation. I've, you know, been a real estate investor for 6 years. I was in the same boat with my high paid W-2 job. It was every time around in April, it wasn't a matter of, are we paying taxes? It was a matter of, okay, how much do we got to write that check in taxes? And it got pretty scary. And, you know, started getting into real estate investing and, oh, now we're starting to get a couple thousand dollars in refunds. And I think our highest year, if memory serves me right, I think we had a $20,000 refund. It's like, well, geez, there's almost a down payment for another property. So, you know, if you get started, you know, get the ball rolling and, you know, can get those tax deductions. And, you know, obviously the, you know, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warrens of the world may not like this, but all this is legal. All this is in the tax code with the blessing.
They don't like it, but they use it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
right. You know, so publicly they don't like it, but you can also find where they're real estate investors themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just the hypocrisy of politics, right? Is like, do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly.
But the wealthiest people in the world use the tax code to their advantage because the tax code is written in such a way to be advantageous because it helps social programs.
Yeah.
Right? You're either creating jobs or you're creating good housing. And, you know, the whole war on the wealthy in this country that is now taking shape because everybody has to pay their quote fair share.
Yeah.
But this tax code has been in place since the 50s, mm-hmm. right? There's been plenty of politicians that have the ability to change it. They don't change it because it actually helps the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, politics aside, the, whoever is in charge of helping write and rewrite these tax codes has the ability to change them. Mm-hmm. But the reason that they're written that way is so that it helps the economy and society flourish.
Exactly. And I know Tom Wheelwright said this numerous times on, you know, his podcast and speaking engagements. I heard him speak at the summit at SAND last June in Belize. You know, as far as, you know, taxes go, it really is, you know, here's the book. Here's a roadmap. And he's always said, if you want to change your tax, change your facts. And I think so many of us, you know, from K through 12, we're just kind of accept that, okay, I make this money. I got to send 20, 30, 40% to Uncle Sam. And that's just the way it is. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you start to educate yourself, you know, I have myself had a return where I had a negative $400,000 loss. Maybe in the future I will get that. But, you know, there's one tax code for everyone. You know, there isn't a tax code for the quote unquote rich and a tax code for everyone else.
Exactly.
You have to educate yourself. You have to surround yourself with, you know, smarter people. And yeah, maybe someone listening to this doesn't have the resources or wherewithal to do a, you know, $400 million new construction project, but, you know, maybe they do have $50,000, $10,000 to invest and get a small portion of that through a K-1. And okay, I don't have a negative $400,000 loss on my tax returns, but hey, I can use a $4,000 credit and deduct for my taxes. And, you know,
it's a light switch.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. It's not a light switch, right? It takes time. It takes time to build up depreciation. It takes time to build up a real estate portfolio, and that's okay. Right. You can start now and grow into that over time. You don't need to have $1 million to put to work today to get the benefits of the tax code.
Exactly. So, and obviously, you know, the bigger the deals, obviously the bigger the deductions, but, you know, all of us can start small with a small investment and, you know, work our way up. So now with that, Steve, you had mentioned, and maybe I can segue into this. I know you're one of the managing partners of Integrity Holdings Group, and obviously you've kind of touched base a little bit on, you know, some of the investments, you know, self-storage and multifamily that you've done. Can you do us a, you know, kind of a little bit of a deeper dive as to, you know, what Integrity Holdings are, you know, what you are all invested in, how'd you start, and, you know, maybe kind of lead into, can other investors, you know, partner with you in this type of investment? This week's podcast is brought to you by Focus Wealth Group. Do you know you need to get life insurance, but don't know where to start or how much to get? Have you heard of infinite banking, but not sure how it works? Reach out to Barry Brooksby and his team. Barry is not only a mentor, but a friend who has helped me for the past 6 years in my pursuit of cash flow and financial independence. Their mission is simple. They teach people how to make money and hold on to more money. Learn more and set up your free initial consultation at focuswealthgroup.com.
Yeah, so I mean, we've been in business for 11 years now, and we've done the wholesaling, we've done flipping, now we moved into commercial. And, you know, so we've done some self-storage, we've done some student housing, we have done multifamily investments. And yeah, I mean, so we're syndicators, essentially. We basically put together a portfolio of properties and other investors invest alongside of us. We're investors first, so we're looking at deals as to where we're going to be putting our capital. And then once we find deals with strong operators that are going to come bring us that deal, then we'll fund the deal with our money and with the investors that partner with us.
Okay.
And, you know, syndication simply is a word that means many hands make light work. Right? It's just, it's pooling time,
yeah,
money and resources together so that you can buy larger deals than maybe you'd be able to buy on your own. So instead of buying a duplex, people invest with us. And, you know, we just bought a 384 unit complex in Daytona Beach.
Okay. Right?
So $45 million project, that's not something that each of us individually would be able to sure. do. But you can do that collectively in a syndication. Mm-hmm. And we manage the investment. We manage the managers. We operate the day-to-day. The investors invest passively alongside of us. They get the tax benefits that we get passed through to them as well. And they just basically get mailbox money.
Nice. And then I'm guessing, obviously, come every February, March, then your company then issues all the investors a K-1, which basically says, you know, you put in this much, you receive this much, here's how much you earn taxes. Oh, but here's your portion of the depreciation, the tax write-offs, you know, might be 5% of what the entire project is, but hey, that just flows right to your individual tax return. So you can benefit like the quote unquote rich do.
Exactly. Yeah. The last project that we did, our average investor took about a 35% K-1 loss against their initial investment.
Nice.
So yeah, 35 cents on the dollar in a negative is nice.
Yeah.
So it's just, and every deal's different, right? So that number fluctuates quite a bit.
Sure.
Depending on the deal, but that's what we mean by tax advantaged.
Mm-hmm. So, and now with Tegrity Holdings, like if, you know, say one of our listeners or one of my listeners was interested in this, you know, is there a minimum amount to get in there? Do you have to be accredited? Is there a, you know, holding period, or does that vary with the, you know, types of investments or funds involved?
Yeah. So every fund is different. Every deal is different. You know, the best thing for them to do is go to integrityhg.com and fill out the investor, sign up for the investor club. Okay. The investor club will allow us to get on a phone call with them and kind of understand what their investing goals are and see if we're the best fit. If we're not, we'll be honest with you and just say, hey, this isn't going to be a good fit for us. But we like to kind of understand why people are investing, what their experience level is. So both accredited, non-accredited investors have invested with us in the past. Minimums vary per deal. We've done $3 million deals. We've done $7 million deals. So, you know, all of those things are kind of up in the air until we find out exactly who we're talking to and what their investment strategy is.
Gotcha. Okay. And then if, I know you mentioned the, obviously take non-accredited or, you know, have 506B syndications available too. As far as an investor, is there kind of like a floor for what the minimum investment is? And then like for saying proper expectations, is there a minimum, you know, 3-year hold period before they get their money back, or 5 or 7 or?
Yeah. So we're actually still in the middle of creating the private placement memorandum for our funds.
Oh, okay.
So those will be finalized this week, but they have not been finalized yet.
All right.
So again, easiest thing to do is just jump on a call with us and see. I mean, our absolute minimum in the past has been 50,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't see that changing unless we do like a Reg A filing, which I don't think we're going to do. And then, yeah, typically we tell people, you know, 3 to 7 years is the average hold time, and that varies project per project. I think what we're going to be doing in the fund is an initial 3-year lockup period.
Okay.
And then they can do an annualized redemption if they so choose, but they just need to give us some time to do that. We're trying to shorten the time frame that people have to lock it up. But these deals take time to reposition and to create cash flow. So there is some requirement to hold it into the deal so that it gets, so that we can capitalize it well.
Yeah. So obviously this wouldn't be your emergency fund or fund that you want to pull from, you know, a 6-month CD in your bank to throw in another 6 month. Obviously this would be a long-term, you know, myself personally, I've invested in numerous syndications through my self-directed retirement accounts. You know, if anyone's interested, you could go back to our episode with my interview with Amanda Holbrook of Specialized Trust Services. They've helped hundreds, if not thousands, of investors invest in these type of syndications. Downside, if you want to call it a retirement account, You can't get the tax benefits rolled over to your personal return. If you invest outside of your retirement account, obviously you can. Everyone's situation is a little bit different, but hey, if you don't have $50,000 in cash lying around, but you have a $50,000 in your retirement account that you want to get a, just throwing on 8 to 10%, maybe 12% return in 3 to 7 years, I think that's a win-win without the volatility of the stock market like we've been seeing here as of this recording. I think we're on week 4 or week 5 of the Dow Jones going down. I kind of lost track after a while.
It's a roller coaster.
Exactly. So maybe as Steve, just to kind of finish up, I think how I put this as politically correct as possible. I know a lot of people, politicians, Instagram influencers, they have this perception that, whether it's landlords, business owners, millionaires, et cetera, they're just all evil people and, just trying to make money and screw people over, yada, yada, yada. Obviously, I don't believe that's true. I think you can always find, exceptions to the rule. But in your case with Integrity Holdings, you mentioned that you actually carve out a profit or carve out a small percentage to hand out to nonprofits. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you're giving back to the communities that you invest in?
Yeah, so I mean, our tagline is invest with purpose. And what that means for us is the heart behind the business is that we're not just growing our own wealth, right? We're blessed in the sense that we have a great business that creates a lot of cash flow and income for not only ourselves, but our investors. And because of that, we're mission oriented in that we want to fund nonprofits around the world. So it started off as a small percentage. I think the first deal that we did, we carved out 1%, and then it grew to 2%, and then it grew to 4%, and now the last deal is 20%. So we like to give till it hurts, and it doesn't come out of our investors' return profile. It comes out of our business profile. Our big, hairy, audacious goal, if you've read books that talk about BHAGs, is eventually we'd like to be able to give 80% of our net revenue away to nonprofits. And we giving is the heart behind the business. So we want to be generous and abundant outside of ourselves within the communities that we're investing in, and then also with nonprofits that are serving people around the world. We're helping save girls from sex trafficking in the Philippines. We're digging wells in Western Africa. We're feeding people in Ukraine right now during the invasion. We put several hundred Afghani refugees on a plane the day that the Afghani Air Force shut down the base in Bagram. So we've been able to do some amazing things through our partners and just be able to write the checks to be able to help those partnerships flourish and go help some people around the world. And there's no shortage of need in the world. And if we can make a dent in that, then that's kind of what we want to do. And our investors get to partake in that blessing alongside of us because they're making good returns, but they're also getting updated as to what their dollars are going towards as well. So
Well, yeah, if you can make a good return and do good in the world, I think it was Jim Rohn, the quote, you can get everything in life that you want as long as you can help enough people get what they want in life. And obviously, whether they're helping, refugees, helping, people get wells or basic needs, I think unfortunately, there's no shortage of needs out there, and definitely commendable for what you and Integrity Holdings are doing to, pass on 20, percent and hopefully up to even 80% of your net revenue. That is very, very admirable, and hope you get there.
appreciate that.
So, all good. As we're getting close to wrapping up here, is there anything maybe I should have asked you that I didn't, or anything else you want to let my listeners know that you're working on or what's coming up down the pipeline in 2022?
No, I mean, we're launching a couple of funds that will be investing in all kinds of deals around the country. We're focused very much this year on, relationship building and helping our not just our investors, but our people that work for us be intentional about kind of their why, right? I think entrepreneurs often talk about their why. I just had a good friend of mine, Jim Shields, on our podcast recently, and he talks about the family board meeting, and he owns a company called 18 Summers. And it's really just as entrepreneurs, how we tell ourselves this entrepreneurial lie, which is everything that I do for my family, while at the same time leaving your family behind. And I think it's very easy to get caught in that cycle of I'm grinding for my family and then don't give to them what they need in terms of time and intentionality. So, you know, that's something that we've been talking about a lot recently with our kids, with my wife, with all of our employees, and even with our investors now, like, hey, why are you investing, right? Mm-hmm. If the goal of investment is to give you time, how are you being intentional about that time and putting it on the calendar and making sure that you're carving out the time that your family needs and wants? And, you know, so I think it goes back a lot to that. If you can think about your why and do the seven layers of why, right? So it's like, I'm investing so I can get passive income. Why? Mm-hmm. Well, I want passive income so that I can work less. Why?
Yeah.
I want to work less so I can do this. Why? Right. Mm-hmm. And ask yourself seven layers of why, and then you'll get down to the real reason of what that why is.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing that I can say is that what gets calendared gets done.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not putting date nights on the calendar, if you're not putting time with your kids on the calendar, if you're not putting vacations on the calendar, if you're not putting these things on the calendar, they will slip by. They will not get done. You know, I think a lot of us were raised in maybe some environments where spontaneity was something that was admired. Like, oh, that's good that we get to just hang out whenever.
Yeah.
You get to call me whenever. You know, I would argue that the opposite is true, right? That that people are important and things are important enough to get put onto your calendar so that you're intentional about getting them done. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that we've been talking through since the beginning of this year, and we'll continue talking through it. So.
Cool. So, and last question, I apologize for not mentioning this or bringing this up before. What is the name of your podcast that you do?
Oh yeah. So we do a podcast called Free from Wall Street.
Free from Wall Street. Okay.
And yeah, I mean, obviously we're just talking about how to get off the roller coaster of the stock market, or at least a portion of your portfolio. And that was born from my dad. You know, he lost about half of his wealth in the downturn of 2007, 2008, and then he passed away. Oh, so he didn't get to ride the market back up. And honestly, none of us know when the music stops. So
yeah.
If you can diversify yourself into some alternative assets and some things over here where it's not as volatile. I mean, uh-huh. If he lived for another 2 years, he would have recouped all of that cash.
Right.
He didn't. Right. So market volatility, I think, is something that all of us in real estate talk about, and maybe in a way that makes people feel like we're trying to pitch them on something. But uh-huh. The fact is that the market over time does make returns, right? 6 to 8% consistent returns in the S&P 500, which is a great return over time.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that people don't talk about is volatility, right? And if you just Google volatility calculator, it will really open your eyes as to how volatility hurts your long-term returns, mm-hmm. right? So everybody talks about dollar cost averaging and 6 to 8% consistent returns over time, over 30 or 40 years. Well, that's fine. But, you know, like you just talked about, the stock market's down however much today. You know, what's interesting is that if you lose 20% on $100,000 in one day, mm-hmm. you don't have to make 20% tomorrow to get back to even, right?
Yeah.
You have to make 25%.
Exactly.
So the cost of volatility is real, and it's mathematically something that you can figure out, but most of us overlook it because we're dollar cost averaging. So
exactly.
I would just say, you know, think about those types of things when you're hedging against long-term volatility, and your legacy is what you're working towards, right? And whether mm-hmm. that's your legacy for yourself or retirement, or the legacy for your kids or your grandkids, that volatility is going to cost you money. And God forbid you're mm-hmm. on the bottom when the music stops.
Exactly.
And your legacy gets hurt. And if you don't have downside protections in place, it's just a virtue of education.
Exactly. And yeah, I'm a big fan of diversification, and not diversification meaning I have growth stocks, international stocks, bonds, income, dividend paying stocks, et cetera. You know, obviously real estate, paper assets, commodities, et cetera. You know, true diversification that I think the, you know, top 1% and a lot of successful people out there actually, you know, work at day in and day out. So sounds good. Well, for anyone listening, all these resources we mentioned, from the podcast Free from Wall Street to Tax-Free Wealth, the famous purple book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that will all be in the show notes for you to click on. So if you're driving or working out while listening to this, you don't need to scramble for a pen and paper and hit the rewind button to find that. So with that, Stephen, I appreciate you coming on to the show, and hope that my listeners gained some valuable insight from your journey.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to share, rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For more updates, check out www.wealthandfreedomnexus.com. Remember, nothing on this show should be considered tax, legal, investment, or professional advice. This show is produced solely for educational and informational purposes. Please consult an appropriate and licensed tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for specific advice for your situation. For distribution or publication rights or media interviews, please contact the host.